Hello, and welcome to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. A reminder that LinuxQuestions.org will be in the .org pavilion at the upcoming Linux World Conference and Expo. If you'll be attending the Expo, do make sure to stop by and say hello. We'll see you next week in Boston. While I'm on the conference note, I have also confirmed my trip to San Diego for the Desktop Linux Summit, which LQ, of course, is a sponsor of. I had potentially planned to fly right from San Diego back to Santa Clara for the MySQL User Conference, but that is still up in the air at this time. If you'll be at DLS and would like to connect, do feel free to contact me. The LQ Wiki continues to grow and is almost up to 2,700 articles, and of course we are currently driving to 3,000. We've made a major change last week, and one that we really hope will make the site much more usable. We've installed some fairly advanced spam heuristics. The spam at the site was getting to a point where it was, I think, detracting from the site. This change should be 100% transparent to all legitimate users, but if you do have a problem, please let us know ASAP. Since we've made this change, I'm happy to announce that we've not had a single spam. The syndicated news forum is back at LQ with a couple of very minor changes. You are still able to review and comment on all news stories that are posted to Elixir just as before, but now the threads do not show up in the zero reply list. This seems to be the best balance and made the most number of LQ members happy, which really is what we aim to do with every decision that we make. Now on to the news. The first story I have is Mandriva fires Gal Duvall. This is a tough one. Gal has confirmed that he has been fired from Mandriva, although the current CEO is claiming that it wasn't fired but laid off because fire insinuated that Gal did something wrong, which he did not. This has to be extremely tough for Gal. I really can't imagine getting quote-unquote fired from LQ. He started the distribution, he co-founded the company, so I think it's pretty fair to say that without him there would be no Mandriva. Now, the reason given by the current CEO was workforce reduction due to poor financial results, but in reality, I'd guess that there's at least a little more to it, and it does appear that Gal was also asked to step down last year. So, taking a distro that has recently definitely had a bit of trouble in the community department, and getting rid of the guy that started the company, I think is the biggest face of the company, and clearly cares the most about community, it seems like a bit of an odd choice, but it's just probably another sign that open source and is really going into a more and more corporate direction. And Mandrake historically had been closely tied to the community and very much a consumer distro, where Mandriva now seems to at least be heading in more of that corporate direction. I've personally had the opportunity to speak with Gal on multiple occasions, and he really is completely a stand-up guy. So I wish him the best of luck with Altio, which is the next project that he seems to be moving on to, and whatever else he decides to do. And if you want to check out Altio, it's at alteo.org and .com. The next story, and actually kind of uncharacteristically, the rest of the stories have to do with Microsoft. And as you can probably tell if you're a regular listener, while I do comment on Microsoft sometimes, I really try to keep it more focused on Linux and open source. But with Microsoft being so intrinsically tied to the future of Linux and open source, and with just so much Microsoft news going on, there are going to be a couple stories in a row here. The first story I have is Microsoft updates Windows Vista roadmap. So it looks like Microsoft has once again delayed the general release of Windows Vista. Now the really bad news for them this time is that they're going to miss another Christmas season. And I've seen reports as high as 30% of all PCs being sold during that November-December area, so this has to be a tough one to swallow. This gives Linux, and of course also Apple with OS X, a little more time to improve their product and gain just a little more footing before the, I'm sure, insane marketing blitz for Vista swings into full gear. So like I said, this had to be a quite painful decision for Microsoft, and leads me to presume really that something is seriously wrong with the product. Or maybe Microsoft has learned from past mistakes. Anything is possible, I guess. Either way, this is quite a critical release for them. After working really, really hard to convince both companies and consumers that XP was the one true path and the way to go, they now have to convince them all over again that Vista is a compelling upgrade. And that's not going to be an easy sell. The easy part for them, though, is that a short time after Vista is released, it will be the default pre-install option for almost every PC you see in any store anywhere. Now, with that setup, it's really almost hard to fail, isn't it? So if the pre-install situation wasn't like it was, and obviously, and of course, that's a humongous if, I know, but if, the computer market really would be such a different animal. So the question then becomes, how much longer can they keep the kung fu death grip on the OEM market? Once they aren't the default no-choice option, they're going to be in a world that looks so much different. A world where there is competition that's based on features, security, and stability. Although, at least they will still have their marketing budgets to fall back on. Now, these delays are certainly causing quite a stir, which of course I think would have been expected. But the amount of stir being caused within Microsoft itself seems to be a little bit greater than I would have anticipated. Some Microsoft employees had even called for exec-level firings, which, to be honest, seems quite reasonable at this point. They've dropped the ball multiple times now while getting compensated quite nicely and are at this point potentially severely impacting the future of the company. While there were no actual firings that I saw, 2 days after they dropped the delay bombshell, Microsoft did announce a reorg. They put Steven Sinofsky, who had been the senior VP from the Office division, in charge of developing future versions of Windows. He's going to replace Brian Valentine, who's been assigned solely to getting Vista out the door, and then they didn't really make a public statement that I saw about what he'll be doing after Vista is actually out. And Mike Nash is also going to leave his job as the head of security technology, also for an unspecified role. So neither of the two big VPs that are getting displaced seem to have gotten fired. They're just being moved to undisclosed places within the company. I'm sure internally Mike Nash is taking a lot of heat because security was cited as one of the major reasons for the delay. So the reality here is that Microsoft has put themselves in a pretty tight spot. They have really, really hyped Vista for quite some time now. So when it does come out, it has to be good. If not, the stock price will suffer, as will the company's long-term reputation. At this point in the game, I don't think they really can afford that. So I'm sure that's why the painful decision to delay was made. But the longer they delay, the weaker they seem. The rumblings about whether they can actually produce will get louder and louder, and the stock price will suffer, and so will the company's long-term reputation. The proverbial chink in the Microsoft armor is definitely growing. Now don't get me wrong. When Vista does finally ship, it's going to see wide adoption. There's just absolutely no question about that. Consumer OEM installs will come first, and with SP1, corporate America will surely follow. Microsoft and Windows aren't irrelevant, despite what you might read or want to believe. Their market share is just way, way too big for them to be in any way irrelevant. But the question is, how many more delays and under-delivered releases can they stand before the current status quo changes? It's a very tenuous time for Microsoft on both the Windows and Office fronts. The day when you walk into a CIO's office and ask, what would it take to replace all of our Windows desktops without getting a blink stare, they're definitely on the horizon, and it's already happened a couple times. The precedent has been set. And I'd guess it's going to come faster than Microsoft had originally anticipated. Luckily for them, though, they're diversifying like crazy these days. They're in Windows, you know, with Windows Mobile on cell phones and the Xbox 360. They are clearly diversifying to the nth degree. Kind of a last quick note on the story. Scoble pointed out another case of journalistic stupidity, which is something I've covered in this podcast just time and time again. One of the quotes that was in the story was that Microsoft had to rewrite a full 60% of the entire code base and still have it out by January. If they could write 60% of the entire code base in that kind of time frame, they wouldn't have to be worrying about these delays in the first place. It's just stupid and nonsensical. But it did make headlines, and I'm sure that's what the author wanted. The next story I have is Hilf Speaks Out About Linux Through Microsoft's Eyes. Now, when I saw the title of this article, which was in Computer World AU, I was really interested to see what Bill Hilf had to say on this topic. As the Director of Platform Technology Strategy, he's in charge of the Microsoft Linux Lab, which means he has to have a really different perspective on this thing than almost anyone else in the world. Unfortunately, though, the article was pretty light on what he thinks about Linux, or even about what Microsoft is actually doing with Linux. It does get a little into what they're doing with open source, though, and obviously that's a topic of interest for me, too. The first thing that caught my eye was his reason for pulling out of Linux World AU, which was what sparked the interview in the first place. Quote, an internal meeting that could not be moved, end quote, was what he said. Now, considering his job function with respect to Linux and where Microsoft is standing right now, that must be a pretty important meeting. I also found his statement about the size of the department quite telling also. Quote, it's a small, experienced, and focused team. It's usually around 8 to 10 people at any given time. End quote. Now, reading between the lines just a little bit there, I'd say the department has some extremely high turnover. But to be fair, I can certainly see why. Now, the two questions that he seemed to dodge the most were, how does Microsoft plan to make money from open source and Linux, and how much does Microsoft view open source and Linux as competition, were the two questions I would have liked to seen answered the most. One thing that does come up in the article is something I've seen multiple times from multiple people within Microsoft in disparate departments too, and I've seen it both on the record and off the record in a little bit more detail. Microsoft is learning and has learned from the OSS development model itself, and they are indeed using some of the methodologies and parts of the paradigm to improve their internal development process. And that's just more proof that the OSS model demonstrably produces better code and does so in less time. And I think we're getting to the point that we don't even need more proof. I don't think anyone from Microsoft to Stallman and anyone in between disagrees with this one. So even though we know it, it's always great to see it in print, especially in an interview like this. I do think an open dialogue between Bill and the Linux team at Microsoft could be quite beneficial for all involved. And if anyone from Microsoft is listening and is interested in making that happen, do certainly feel free to contact me. The last story I have, Microsoft delays IE's ActiveX D-Day. What has to be considered a somewhat ironic turn of events, Microsoft is being forced to change how ActiveX works in order to avoid a software patent held by a company called Eolus. So much for proprietary software indemnifying you against patent issues, which we all knew was a complete farce anyway. As a heavy user of the web, and of course as a proponent of open standards, I'm ecstatic to see anything that decreases the use of ActiveX. It's insecure, it's buggy, it only works in IE, but for some reason that just doesn't stop people from using it. For what reason, I have no idea. On the flip side of this, though, this is yet another example of why software patents are bad. Now, I'd like to think that a little light would go off at some companies when a system that they fully support is used against them in a very questionable way. But for some reason, I don't think that that's going to happen. It should be interesting to see things unfold on April 11th when the browser change does actually go into effect. I do wonder how it's going to change people's perspective on things. Are they going to start to learn why open standards are good and why software patents are bad? While that would be nice, it's extremely unlikely. Now, will they not care about the technological and legal mumbo-jumbo and simply seek out a solution that just works? That's much more likely, which means it could be a good day for Firefox. That's all I have for now, but thanks for listening. And remember, if you like the LQ podcast, please head over to podcastalley.com and vote for us. Thanks.